Blog Talk Radio.
Today you can claim the life you were meant to have. This is All the Way In Radio. I'm your host, Deborah E. Lake, and I'm here to help you recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. It's easy to find people who will tell you you can't, but success and happiness only come when we reject you can't and fully embrace I can. The philosophical foundation for All the Way In can be summed up in the advice of my father, who told me to let the words of my critics roll away like water from a duck's back. So clear your mind and open your heart and join me. You'll be glad you did. Good afternoon. This is All the Way In. I'm Deborah E. Lake, and I'm your host, and we've got a great show for you tonight. This is a month-long series where we're going to be focusing on LGBT couples and the law. Every Monday during the month of February, we're going to have guests who will talk about the legal ramifications for gay, what they're calling gay marriage, same-gender marriage. You pick. I have two guests tonight, Richard Segal, who is a medical doctor and the president of Needy Meds, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show because I think that's something you'll be interested in. And we also have David Pizarra, who is a lawyer and founding president for Pizarra and Grist and Men's Family Law. We'll talk about that as well. So let's bring them right on. Hi.
David. Hi, Deborah. How are you?
David?
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. Richard?
I'm here.
Hi. How are you? Welcome both gentlemen to the show. I am so happy to have you here, and I think we're going to have a really good discussion. Gay marriage. The Defense of Marriage Act, which was passed into federal law in 1996, and the Respect for Marriage Act, which was introduced in the House in 2009. Let's start with that, because I think our listeners and other people, we hear a lot of talk about religion, what's right, what's wrong, that kind of thing. But a lot of the terms get lost in the emotional discussion. So what I'd like to do is stick to the law, if that's possible, okay? So, David, I'd like to start with you since you're the lawyer among us. And, Richard, please jump in if you feel so moved in this part of it. And just clarify, what do we mean by gay marriage? What do we mean by the Defense of Marriage Act and Respect for Marriage, all of that?
Well, gay marriage really has to deal with the sense of equality. It has to do with whether or not someone who's homosexual has the right to choose who they wish to spend their life with and who they wish to have make medical decisions for them, who gets to inherit their property, who gets to have all of the rights and incidents of having a partnership in life analogous to the traditional husband and wife. That's really what gay marriage is about. It's about equality. It's not about any sense of same-sex agenda to subvert the dominant paradigm and convert children. None of that is really what's going on here. If you ask anybody who's gay, who's been in a long-term committed relationship, how they view their spouse and what they would like most for that spouse, it's almost exactly the same thing that if you ask any man about his wife or any wife about their husband. Mm. And that's what gay marriage is all about. Now, Defense of Marriage Act and Respect for Marriage Act are essentially institutionalized bigotry that are trying to subvert the equality movement and place homosexuals in second-class citizenship. It's essentially the segregationist equivalent of Brown versus Board of Education, separate but equal.
That's the Defense of Marriage Act? That's what we're talking about right now?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
Correct.
Okay.
That's my perspective on it. I look at it as the Defense of Marriage Act is really nothing more than trying to say a man and a woman get married, they're the top of the food chain in American society, and if you're gay and lesbian, you might get a second-class or third-class level of relationship. And that's what the Defense of Marriage Act is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we really wanted to defend marriage, if that really was the goal, if the goal really was to take permanent relationships and really put them on a pedestal, we would make getting divorce really difficult.
True.
But we don't do that. And we don't make getting married really difficult. We make getting married the decision that you can make in 20 minutes in Vegas after 3 martinis.
True. Yeah.
That's not the defense of marriage. If we wanted to take an institution and actually put some teeth in it and put some value on it, we would do things that would say, if you want to get married, great. But you've got to go through marriage classes. You've got to go through some training. You have to understand what a marriage really is. It's really a partnership. It's not about having a little gold band on your finger and getting to say, I've got a husband or a wife. It's not about possession and ownership of the other person. It's about building a relationship and a partnership and trying to create a stable family life. And frankly, if we really wanted to defend marriage, we'd do that. And what we would see is that we would have the divorce rate in America plummet. Because rather than people getting married today and divorced tomorrow, they'd actually have to go through a few steps and think about what they were doing. People have to put more thought into getting a driver's license than a marriage license. How are we defending marriage when that's the case?
And what about Respect for Marriage Act? What is that? That was introduced in last year, actually, it looks like. Yeah.
I think it's just the latest version of some form of institutionalized bigotry. It's really nothing more than, you know, we want to say that this is a bright type of relationship and all other relationships are second class or third class.
Hmm. Well, Richard, you're kind of quiet. Tell me where you are with this. One of the things I think happens is we get hung up on the word marriage. Richard, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree that we get hung up on the word marriage. Looking at marriage from a very objective point of view, I really think there's two aspects to it. There's sort of the financial contractual aspect, and then there's a romantic spiritual aspect.
Mm-hmm.
My thought is the government needs to get out of the religious spiritual aspect of it and not be involved with marriage at all. I think the government needs to be involved with the contractual financial aspects of it, and that they should issue civil union licenses, and then if people want the marriage license, then they get it by whatever means is appropriate by whatever organization will bless their union. So that there really should be a two-step process. You look at prenuptial agreements. Well, there's nothing more contractual than that, and really nothing more unromantic than a prenuptial agreement. And yet many people seem to be having those these days.
You know, it's interesting that you say, just to jump in here as a divorce lawyer, that prenuptials are unromantic, because actually what I found is that by dealing with the property issues beforehand, and this is dealing with situations where people, both parties actually have some assets, where it actually makes sense to have a prenuptial, it can actually bring the couples closer because they no longer have to worry about what the property issues are or why they're in the relationship. There's no longer that lingering doubt of, well, is she just a gold digger? Is he only after me because of my big bank account? You know, when you get that cleaned up, you can actually get to the real meat of the relationship of, what do you guys like about each other? Why are you together? And in many ways, that's really what has driven so many of the gay couples for so long, because we've been pressured, because there hasn't been marriage. We've been pressured to look at our relationships and say, what is it that's really keeping us together? And what we find is that it's really a loving relationship that's keeping us together. And when we get to the meat of something, that's the stability that everybody, I think, is trying to reach in our society that we so frequently don't get to because we get blindsided by the bigotry on the one side and the miscommunication of what words mean on the other.
Hmm.
I can see what you're saying, and I'm all in favor of civil union and marriage for any two adults that wish to do it. It doesn't make any difference to me. I just look at it as being a separate process. For example, my wife and I, we were, quote, married by the mayor of the town where we lived in 38, 39 years ago. No religious aspects at all.
Right.
Maybe that should have been a civil union because it has all the same benefits, but there's no spiritual or religious overtones to it.
I would totally back that idea. I think it's just an absolutely fabulous idea to take all of the relationships and say, there's two aspects to it, which one do you want to deal with? Because my views on your religion, frankly, should be thrown out the window. They're completely meaningless. And I should have absolutely no say over what your sense of spirituality and religion mean to you, as you should have none over me. But when it comes to the contractual aspects, I think that the state does have an interest in making sure that we have a clean flow of property between the states. And that people know where they stand in relation to each other. And when it comes to spousal support or buying property together or buying a car together or having children together, all of those are very important state functions that the state does properly need some kind of regulation for.
Well, I would agree, and I think the less that government is involved with religion in any way, the better.
Definitely.
Well, I think maybe you may want to flip that. The less religion is involved in government, the better. But I think we're both going to the same place.
I think that's very true, and it's interesting that in the Bible Belt they have the highest divorce rate of any part of the country.
They also have the highest use of Paxil. What does that tell you?
I remember hearing somewhat facetiously that someone in California was going to put a proposal on the ballot to outlaw divorce as a way to preserve marriage.
I'm a divorce lawyer, and I signed that petition. I think it's a great idea. If you really want to take the Mormons and the Catholics and the Jews and the Hindus and the Buddhists and the Muslims and the Jehovah's Witnesses and Seventh-day Adventists and all these people that are so in favor of Prop 8, and you really want to hold their feet to the fire, let's see what they really mean. Let's get rid of divorce. Go ahead. Let's do it. And you will see a backlash like you've never seen in this country.
I think you're right. You know, one of the things I've never understood is how people say that approving gay marriage in whatever form you wish to use undermines the establishment of a marriage.
It doesn't. And it holds no more water than the separate but equal. It's absolutely completely meaningless. And if you ask anybody that's rational what their neighbor's relationship does to their relationship, anybody with a brain is going to say it has absolutely no effect. My law partner and his wife and their four kids were not affected either positively or negatively by my relationship with my ex. The stability of the relationship is not dependent upon outside sources.
At least it shouldn't be.
And
I think one of the things that happened early on in the debate between whether or not gay marriage should be legal, the argument was shaped around feelings. People were hurt. They were hurt by their churches. They were hurt by their ministers who wouldn't recognize their relationships. And that got clouded, I think. That clouded the whole situation. Someone said to me, I guess about a week ago, that having civil unions versus marriage is the same thing as racially mixed marriages before when they were illegal.
Absolutely.
Being offered civil unions rather than marriage. And I hadn't thought about it that way, but I'm wondering what you think, you both of you think. Did we miss the boat? When racially we could have pushed for this very same thing that we're talking about, have a civil, the government takes care of the civil, And if you want to have a marriage, go to your church, go to your synagogue, go to your mosque and do that. Do you think we missed the boat civilly?
I personally don't, because I think that was such a sea change in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that that's anything that can happen probably in my lifetime. That's very much a cultural attitude that's more Spanish, tends to be more Latin America, where they have both. In America, we have those two ideas so conflated that I don't know that separating them is going to be an easy thing to do. In terms of the gay community, when we attacked this issue, yes, there were certainly a lot of hurt feelings. Yes, certainly a large number of the gay community have resentments towards religion because of the damage and the abuse that has been done to us in terms of the lies that have been told in trying to win the war of gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Did we miss the boat in terms of how we attacked Prop 8? Absolutely. That is probably one of the biggest bunglings of an election I've ever seen. It's absolutely appalling to me the way the gay community just sat back, and we really just assumed that in California it was inconceivable that Prop 8 would pass, and we kind of let the ball fall. Very much the same way we did in the mid-70s when Harvey Milk was getting agitated. It was inconceivable until it actually happened, and then, oh my God, now we have to do something, and now we have to get active and get motivated, and that's exactly what's happened with the Courage campaign and a lot of these other grassroots actions to get gay marriage back on the ballot. Personally, I think it's a mistake to do it in 2010. I think it should be in 2012, but that's a different issue. But in terms of are we letting our emotions blindside us, on some level we did. We let ourselves get complacent when we shouldn't have.
I think in this whole issue of gay marriage and gay rights, it would be very easy to replace gay with African-American, and you would have the same situation as back in the 50s. And people didn't get to vote back then as to whether interracial marriage or equality was something that we would have. It was just done by the courts and by laws, and now it's worked out reasonably well.
Yeah, and you could do the same thing using the word Chinese back in the 1800s, because there's a long history there also. Chinese were not allowed. So America has a long history of discrimination. As much as we like to tout, Lady Liberty and our stores are open for everybody, that's not really the truth. The truth of the matter is we're wide open so long as you're rich, white, and preferably male. If you don't fit that category, the reality is we set up an awful lot of barriers to full equality in this country, and we have historically.
I think you're totally right, and people just, some things we just shouldn't get to vote on. Some things are just right because they're right.
Yeah, and thankfully we've got a judiciary that will eventually right the ship here, and that's the purpose of the judiciary. It's why we have separation of powers, because we don't want the masses controlling what's correct. We don't want the masses interpreting the Constitution, because, frankly, the masses are illiterate, uneducated boobs that are controlled by people like Rupert Murdoch, and so long as they can buy a six-pack of beer at Walmart, they're happy. They don't want to actually think about what things mean and whether or not their rights are being infringed.
That's demonstrated by the Tea Party people and a lot of other people who are complaining about things that really have no impact on them.
It's my opinion, if you ask most of the people who are in the Tea Party little kerfuffle that's going on, they don't have any real understanding of constitutional law. They don't even understand really where the Tea Party came from and what that whole issue is about. They think it has to do with rebellion against oppression. And the fact of the matter is, so much of that early American history dealt with lack of representation. And not so much the taxation, but it was the fact that they were being taxed but not getting representation. They had no government. That's what the issue was. But I don't think most of these people understand that distinction.
Well, I was
we have a population that's motivated by sound bites. How many times do we have to hear lipstick on a pig before we're going to realize, okay, we're hearing the same thing over and over and over again? Time to grow up, people.
I was reading, they were talking, an article about the estate tax, and they were saying that it affects less than 1% of people or estates.
Yeah.
Maybe closer to 0.5%, and yet you have all these Tea Party people rallying against the, as they put it, the death tax, when it has no impact on almost all of them.
Right. But that's the American dream. It's the hope that someday they'll be rich enough to have to actually pay taxes. It's the illusion that they have the opportunity to get successful, and the reality is they don't.
Yeah.
They're probably never going to break out of the social class that they're in because they're not willing to work hard enough and long enough to be dedicated enough to make the changes in their life that are necessary for them to go up a class, a level or two.
Yeah.
That's why the lottery's so popular.
Yeah, absolutely. God bless the lottery. And, you know, I guess somebody does win the lottery fairly often, so.
Well, let's take a break right here. And when we come back, I want to get your thoughts on what people think they will lose and what they will gain based on this topic. And then we'll find out a little more about your organizations as well. So we're going to take a quick break for about 30 seconds, and we'll be right back.
Isn't that John and Rachel over there?
I thought they broke up.
Broke up? When?
A while back. John looks good.
Why wouldn't he? Who told you they broke up?
Rachel did.
Well, maybe she was just talking, venting.
No, Rachel found out John had HIV, and she was going to leave him.
What? HIV?
Yeah, she was worried that she had it too, but her test came back negative. I wonder what made her change her mind. Maybe...
What?
Well, when my brother told me he had HIV, he gave me a book. Said it would help us talk. You remember. The title was Your Neighbor Has AIDS.
Oh yeah, I read that too.
And when Rachel told me about John, I asked her not to make any decisions until she'd read it.
That was smart. That book helped you and your brother.
Yeah, and what I learned helped me talk with Mom, too.
You think that made a difference for them?
I'd bet money on it, and you know I'm not a betting woman.
But you are a great sis and good friend.
Your Neighbor Has AIDS by Deborah E. Lake is available at DeborahELake.com, Amazon.com, and select bookstores.
Okay, we're back, and I'm here with my guests, two guests, David Pizarro and Richard Segal. We're talking about, among other things, we kind of got off track a little bit, but we're talking about gay marriage and the law. I want to touch on the emotions, because I think that is what is getting in the way. First of all, there's a lot of misinformation out there. Like, some people believe that if same-gender couples were allowed to be legally recognized, then that would open the floodgates for other types of relationships, polygamy, you name it. I won't go down the list. They've been pretty bad, but we don't need to do that. But let's address some of these fears that are out there that people have. What will same-gender couples gain when our relationships are recognized, and what will heterosexuals lose, if anything, as far as you see it, legally? Both of you.
Well, legally, the sense of equality is probably one of the biggest ones, but the actual legal effect would be the benefits that come with marriage, whether it be inheritance, whether it be federal recognition for Social Security benefits. There's approximately 1,000 to 1,500 federal benefits that are denied committed gay couples because they're not technically married thanks to the Defense of Marriage Act. That's from a legal perspective. From the emotional perspective, it's the sense of equality, the sense of having accomplished something and becoming a mature part of our society and being able to establish that long-term committed relationship that's recognized. And that's a really important factor that's frequently overlooked. In terms of what would heterosexual couples lose as a consequence of gay couples being called married, I'm pretty sure you can't find a single thing. I've racked my brain. I've never been able to come up with anything that if I get married is going to take away from my partner and his wife. There's nothing. If anything, what it does is it show to his children that we live in a society where they can make choices and be similarly respected, and if anything, it gives them a better sense of security by seeing stable relationships and how you form them. There's nothing to be lost. There's everything to be gained.
I would second that totally. I can't imagine what a heterosexual couple would lose by allowing gay marriage. It's just beyond me. And I've never had the opportunity to ask somebody who is against gay marriage, what would you lose? but I suspect it would be one of those Jon Stewart or Colbert moments where they couldn't come up with anything.
I think you're pretty much right on that, because usually when people are against gay marriage, they fall back on some biblical argument or some argument of, well, it's never been allowed before. And well, neither of those really hold a lot of water with me. The biblical argument probably carries even less, because at least for some semblance of tradition, you could maintain that society's ordered the way it always has been, and that seems to be working, as opposed to this kind of mythical man in the sky that tells us the way we're supposed to run our lives. And when I look at the people who are doing that, their lives are usually pretty chaotic and not that well ordered.
I would agree. It's the Bible, you can find almost anything if you look hard enough and interpret it the right way.
Yeah, it's the most flexible documents out there, as near as I can tell. And I'm a lawyer. I'm pretty good at twisting words around, and it's like, good Lord, who wrote this thing?
Well, that's the beauty of it, I think. You can read it. You can read one passage and get 10 different meanings, depending where you are in your life and what you're looking for. And I think that's part of what makes it so relevant to people. But one of the things I think that is going on when people are so adamantly against the equality, first of all, they don't hear that. What they hear is the biblical part or the religious aspect of it. You're going to come into my church and tell me I have to do something that I don't want to do. That's what they hear. And that's what gets, I think, picked up mostly by the press. And then the other part, I think, is their fear. They're afraid. We as humans, we tend to be afraid of what is unknown, unfamiliar kind of thing. And then there are people who feed off that fear and use it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, all you got to do is watch Pat Robertson for more than 3 seconds, and you know that all he's doing is fear-mongering. But when you look at what are the real underlying factors, what is there to fear? What's the real cause here that people are being manipulated around? So much of it is really anti-feminist. At the core of it, why are homosexual men considered scary? Well, there's two big things. One, they threaten other men's masculinity because there's this sense of, ooh, you're acting like a girl if you're kissing another boy. So one of you has to play the female role, which is just a whole bunch of bunk. And the other is this sense of feminization that, you know, if you're in a subservient role, you're therefore less than, which on some level certainly that would apply, but I don't know that it necessarily applies in relationships between couples, and I think it really doesn't apply in a much wider societal level.
I think it's also the strangeness. I have to admit it still sounds a little odd when two women in a relationship talk about each other's wife as being the wife. Now, I accept it, and I have no problem with it, but it just still strikes me as a little odd using that terminology, or two men talking about each other as being their husbands. But I think it's something that my kids, who are in their 30s, think nothing of.
And your grandkids, who are in their teens, are going to absolutely not even be aware of, is my experience.
Right.
What I'm seeing these days is, kids are coming out at 12, 13, 14, their friends at 15, 16, and 17. It's such a non-issue amongst them. They don't even think about sexuality in nearly the same terms that we do. And it's completely a generational issue, which is one of the reasons why I think gay marriage, frankly, should be held off the ballot for another 2 years, because our chances of it passing, as crude and as noxious as this phrasing is, you know, as the older people die off, our chances increase because the younger ones are voting for us.
And then there's also the whole issue of the military, repeal of the don't ask, don't tell. Statistically, people are more for it than they were like a couple of years ago. It's 60-something percent. I think 61% are for having gays in the military and repealing the don't ask, don't tell. So there is a trend moving in that direction, for sure, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, don't ask, don't tell is essentially dead in the water. At this point, it's just a question of when are we going to actually bury the body.
Exactly.
I've told this joke for a long time, and some people get it and some people don't. As a gay man, I'm kind of against them repealing don't ask, don't tell, because it was always my great get out of jail card free if there was ever a draft. Combined with the fact that, you know, my brethren are in the military and they go through language school to get trained on how to, you know, translate Arabic and Urdu and Urdu and all these great languages. They get kicked out of the military, they go work for an independent contractor, they get paid three times as much money, and guess who they're working for? Their old boss back in the military.
Yeah.
You know, you're making more money than you used to. Just, what are you doing?
Well, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think one of the fears is that, particularly in the military, that homosexuals are going to put the moves on other men. And I was just listening to the news today where they were interviewing a female soldier. It was on a talk show. And she was saying that she finds it worse the moves that men put on her.
Absolutely. I mean, the level of sexual harassment of women in the military is through the roof. And any woman that's ever been in the military will tell you that. And frankly, you know, a gay guy making it a pass at a straight guy, he's going to get one or two reactions. He's either going to get told, thanks for the compliment, but not interested, or he's going to get hit. That's just the way it's going to be. And if he gets hit, he's probably never going to do it again.
And a gay man putting moves on straight men is just not going to work. I mean, eventually, I would think that most gay men were going to try to make sure that they're talking or putting moves on someone who's gay.
Yeah, but
generally,
if for no other reason, who wants to be turned down? You know, you want to know you're going to at least have a chance.
Yeah, exactly. But the other thing is also, I mean, at the end of the day, most military people just want to do their job. You know, I mean, how often in the corporate world does a gay man hit on a straight coworker? Not that often, because at the end of the day, we're working to do a job. And we tend to separate out our social life and our business life. And whether that's in the military setting, which gets a little bit twisted because people are living together and working together, but the reality is they've always lived and worked together, and there's always been homosexuals in the military.
Yeah, and that's the illogic behind the argument, because they're side by side right now.
Exactly.
As we speak.
I mean, on some level, in the pre-segregation days, made more sense because at least then they could say, well, they are segregated, so we don't actually have any experience of them being integrated.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, we do have experience of them being integrated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if the military is concerned about sexual harassment, the more bang for the buck is looking at male on female sexual harassment than anything else.
Absolutely.
True.
Absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately, that is true, and that's part of the misogynistic life we live sometimes. So anything else we need to talk about as far as the laws and let's look at what's next. What do you see?
Well, I'm pretty sure that, you know, the Prop 8 trial that's going on now being pressed by David Boies, I'm pretty sure at the trial level we're going to win on basic constitutional grounds. And the question is then going to be how fast it's going to work its way up to the Supreme Court and what are they likely to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that realistically we're looking at about a 3 to 5 year window there. Mm-hmm. The question is, you know, hopefully someone like Scalia will have died or resigned by then, but probably not going to happen. You know, which means that now we're going to have this traditionally very conservative body of men and two women reviewing the law and figuring out whether or not an anti-gay marriage constitutional amendment is acceptable or not. And the problem with saying somebody is conservative is, what does conservative really mean? Because there's conservative, which means, you know, very, very strict interpretation of the U.S. Constitution. If it's not clearly, explicitly stated there, it doesn't exist. That's one way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the converse of that is, if it's not specifically denied, therefore, it would be included.
Hmm.
And depending on which way they choose to view marriage at that time, it could go either way. Traditionally, marriage is accorded a great amount of respect, and it's one of the primary privacy and pursuit of happiness rights. So traditionally, you would say that the U.S. Supreme Court should come down in favor of it. We also have a heavily Catholic Supreme Court. that's kind of scary because these guys are not so good when it comes to the gays. Catholics and gays don't mix all that well unless they're in the priesthood. That's a whole different topic. So we're not really sure. You know, I don't know where that's going to go. I know where I'd like to see it go. I'd like to see them come down to very strict constitutional analysis that says marriage is one of the fundamental rights in our society and we're going to uphold it in all of its forms. People should be allowed to order their life however they want. Don't know if that's going to happen.
From a non-lawyer's point of view, I think the genie is out of the bottle and it's never going to go back. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. The setback in California was on some level a setback, on another it was sort of a call to action. So,
definitely a call to action. Speaking of action, what can the everyday person do? What do you suggest to help move things along or get connected if they want to do more politically or whatever?
The organization that right now is probably garnering the most amount of attention and is hopefully going to do the most good, even though I disagree with some of the tactics, is the Courage Campaign. It's couragecampaign.org, if I remember correctly. And they're trying to do grassroots organizing, a la the Obama campaign, but when it comes to gay rights in California. And we're trying to motivate people to get Prop 8 repealed on the ballot for the 2010 election. And that they need money and support and volunteers. And volunteering is probably one of the best things that people can do. The other big thing, frankly, that people can do is come out. National Coming Out Day is October 11th, if I remember correctly. And visibility is a huge factor in all of this. It's one of the benefits of being gay is that you have the ability to hide when you need to. It's also one of our biggest detriments is the fact that we can hide. And it's hard for people to see. And until it's personalized, until somebody knows someone who's gay, it's the big, ugly boogeyman that's hiding in the closet, literally.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming out is an issue for everyone. And that is true because it's a catch 22. You don't come out, people don't know about you, but if you come out, then that's another bag of issues to deal with as well sometimes. But also sometimes you're surprised pleasantly when you
I've dealt with a lot of people come out and everybody's got their own process and they do it all at their own pace and some come screaming out and others just kind of step a toe out and tell them about what you're most comfortable with and what your family of origin taught you and where you come from and who your friends are. But at the end of the day, I've known very few people. In fact, I don't think I've known any that wanted to go back.
Or were sorry that they did come out.
Living authentically is probably the best thing you could do for your spirit and for your health.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But that's not something that fundamentalists want people to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want people to live authentically. They want them to live according to some code of conduct that they're in charge of. It's a control issue.
Yeah.
That's where the fundamentalists are getting involved here, and that's where they're causing a lot of the problems, and they're helping people to stay in the closet and stay miserable.
I would agree.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your organizations. Richard, how about the organization that you founded?
Sure. I run a nonprofit called Needy Meds. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
No.
Needy Meds has information on programs that help people who can't afford their medications or health care costs.
Mm-hmm.
We have data on around 2,400 programs now that help people with medication costs and with other costs related to their illness. We also have a list of around 11,000 free and low-cost clinics. All the information is available at no cost on our website, and the URL is www.needymeds.org. The site's visited anywhere from visited by 13,000 to 15,000 people most workdays.
Mm-hmm.
Wow!
So it's a busy site. A lot of good information. We're helping people save a lot of money. We also relatively recently introduced a free drug discount card, which anybody can use, and it's good at about 60,000 pharmacies throughout the country. You can save on prescription drugs, over-the-counter medicines and medical supplies, and pet prescription medicines you buy at a pharmacy. The average savings, depending on the day, is 40 to 45%, ranging anywhere from nothing to 90% off what you would pay if you were paying cash for these medications or supplies. And you can download a card, or we'll mail you one for free, and the address is on the website. We send out thousands of these, and we're saving people hundreds of thousands of dollars.
That's great. And you're right, it doesn't have anything with the topic today, but I just recently did a series on HIV, and one of the major concerns is about paying for medications across the country. So it's important that this information gets out to people. Yeah, yeah.
There are lots of programs that help people with HIV meds, and just there are over 4,000 drugs available through these programs.
Wow, that's great. I really applaud your work. And anything else you'd want people to know about that?
Just visit the website. All the information is there. It's easy to access. And if you are having trouble affording your medications or health care costs, there is help available for many people. You just have to find it, and that's why we put it all together.
That's great, great. So David, tell us about your men's law.
Men's Family Law, www.mensfamilylaw.com. It's a website devoted to men and family law. We're primarily doing father's rights, husband's rights, non-custodial parents' rights. Primarily the goal is to, not to bash women, but it's to empower men. Men tend to not feel empowered in the family court system because there's such a bias in favor of the woman. Everything from the Domestic Violence Protection Act through to preference for child custody and child visitation. And there's some reasons for that. Mostly it has to do with the way in which people are organizing their relationships. You know, dad goes out and works 40, 60, 80-hour work weeks to provide a home and food on the table. Mom is more of a stay-at-home type mom, and when they break up, mom goes into court and says, well, dad always works 60 or 80 hours a work week. I don't see why he should stop working 60 or 80 hours a work week. Well, he's coming into court going, wait a second, the only reason I was doing that was so that I could have a family. If I'm not going to have a family, I don't want to work that much. I don't want to actually spend time with my kids.
Hmm.
Courts sometimes agree with me, and sometimes they don't. It all depends.
Hmm.
But the goal really is to allow men to have a stronger voice in the court system and to feel that they've got some opportunities. There's a tremendous amount of bias, and it's really unfair because the weapons of domestic violence protection and the weapons that are used in divorce court against men are so insidious. I was in court this morning, and the woman filed what was on its face an absolutely bogus restraining order. I mean, the allegations were just absurd. But the judge granted the restraining order because they have to. On the off chance that she's telling the truth, the problem with that is the dad is alienated from his child for a minimum of 3 weeks before he gets to see his kid with no way to appeal that.
Hmm.
And it's solely on she goes into court and says, I'm scared for my life, I'm scared for my baby, and the judge says, okay, we're going to kick dad out of your life for 3 weeks. Dad doesn't even get a voice in this. That's
divorce
so unfair.
Certainly brings out the worst in both men and women, that's for sure. And I think it's really important that everyone has the representation that they deserve and need. So I think that's
absolutely
a good thing. Yeah, I think that's a good
absolutely
thing to be doing. But, yeah,
well, thank
divorce
you
does bring out the worst in all of us sometimes. Well, I want to thank both of you for being here and talking about topics that are of interest to all of us and for the work that you're doing. I hope you have a great success this year.
Thank you, man. You have a good day.
All right, you too. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
that's it for today. Thanks for listening. And thanks for telling your friends and family about All the Way In. Because of you, we are getting more and more popular and more listeners. So I thank you for that. This is All the Way In Radio. I'm Deborah E. Lake, here to tell you and let you know that you can recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Until next time. Thanks for listening, and remember to live all the way in your life. Until next time, stay connected. Visit DeborahELake.com. And while you're there, sign up to follow on Twitter and Facebook. You'll also be able to download previously recorded programs. And sign up to become a member and get your edition of the brand new All the Way In newsletter. Members also have access to follow-up broadcasts and special discounts. Remember that you can take All the Way In wherever you go through iTunes. If you have any questions or comments, send an email to allthewayin@deborahelake.com. I'd love to hear from you. All the Way In is a production of Lake.